I'm John Batchelor with my colleague Gene Marks, a small business columnist, and the business of America is small business. So we pay a deal of attention to how small businesses are preparing for what we're told by Bloomberg is a guaranteed recession, which means a couple of quarters with negative growth, meaning you should be cautious. However, how cautious? Gene has a medium.com account, which I recommend because he puts on it his podcasts, his blogs, his conversations, his suggestions, his columns. And right now there's planning ahead, especially for the boomers. The boomers, that's me. Gene's not a boomer. He's a Gen Xer. Gene.
I went here.
Gene is preparing for the future, knowing his business is intact. I'm preparing for the future. My generation is knowing that it's time to find new leadership. And you have suggestions, Gene, based on what is your succession plan? Explain, please.
Well, you know, we're probably going to be talking about this a lot, John, over the next year or two, because I'm actually going to be writing and speaking a lot more about succession planning. And the reason why is because I'm realizing that my audience is there's a big demand for it, because my audience is business owners, primarily, you know, people that own employer owned companies, you know, with employees. And the average age of the U.S. small business owner is about 55 years old, and succession planning and exiting your business becoming a thing. And then even younger business owners, or people that want to get into businesses, millennials, they're starting to get older, and rather than start up a business, they're interested in buying existing businesses. So the whole, you know, buying and selling business and being in the succession plan frame of mind is very important. You know, I wrote in The Guardian. I also, you know, had a conversation on another podcast I did with a friend of mine, Lauren Feldman. And I've also, you know, been talking a lot about how we as baby boomers, and I know I'm not officially a baby boomer, John. It ends in 1964, I think, is the last year. And I was born in 65. But believe me, I'm as guilty as anybody else of not planning for the future. If, you know, we are still working, many of my clients working with old technology. I mean, John, like 80% of small businesses still pay their bills using checks, you know, in 2023. And we still have outdated, many of my clients, me included, have outdated benefit plans. We don't, you know, have, you know, innovative health plans. We don't self-insure. We don't look, cover mental health capabilities, things to build a real workforce. And, you know, and even some of us have kind of let our properties go and, you know, our filing systems and our contract. And listen, there's a lot of things that we as baby boomers have been kind of ignoring. Plus the fact that we're reluctant to give up the reins of our business. We've got to start facing, you know, facing reality. And that is we're getting old and we've got other generations, other employees, other companies, other, you know, entrepreneurs that might want to buy our business. We're going to want to get out of our business at some point. So it's time to think about succession planning. It's time to think about your exit. Even if you don't think it'll happen for another 10 years, you need to be making investments and bringing on the right people and having the right technology to prepare your business to have the best value possible, the highest value possible, so you can make the best exit that you can possibly make. And not enough baby boomers are doing that right now, and we need to be focusing on it.
We've talked for several years now about the shortage of workers, employee wanted signs in the windows. Gene explores the possibility of an intern answering that. What does the intern do for a business, Gene? How does it help?
Yeah, you know, I wrote this just this past week for the Philadelphia Inquirer. I interviewed a guy that runs the co-op program at Drexel. Are you aware of that, John? Like Drexel and Northeastern University have got the co-op programs. You're familiar with that?
I know Drexel, a dominant campus in a campus in Philadelphia. I don't know about the intern program.
It's a five-year program. So like if you go to Drexel or Northeastern University in Boston, you graduate in 5 years because they incorporate working during this five-year period. Now they send you out under as an intern, co-ops to different companies that participate in these programs. It's really wonderful. And it gives, you know, students a lot of work experience. So, you know, but a lot of small businesses and mid-sized businesses are also very eligible to have their own interns. They don't have to participate with a university. They can do it on their own. And listen, we have a big labor shortage that's going on out there. And I thought, you know, gee, you know, there, you know, if you can bring interns and have them perform a function, not only are you getting some labor, some affordable labor, but also you're providing a real education and service to kids in college, to to learn how to behave in a corporate environment and get some work experience. And more companies than you can imagine are doing it. And I spoke to like three or four of them for this Inquirer article, and they all had good success. And they all say they hire, you know, kids in college for 3 months or 6 months or even longer. A big percentage of them turn into full-time employees when they graduate college. They have specific written contracts with the employees. They put them through training. They treat them as employees. They pay them, because there's no such thing as unpaid interns anymore. This is not an apprenticeship world that we live in. And across the board, a lot of these employers were telling me that they've had really good success, both for themselves and for the kids that they hire. So the takeaway is that if you're running a small business or even a mid-sized business and you're looking for help for some talent, think about, you know, getting involved with some local universities or colleges and bringing in a college kid as an intern. And, you know, you're going to have to spend some time teaching them, but the return could be pretty significant, both for you and for that student.
You also have a Medium column recommending books about selling your startup. Now, this is a dream, right? You have a startup, it's a big hit, and you a conglomerate comes along and wants to snap it up. What do you need to know, Gene?
Well, I have a set. We've never talked about this before, John, but I have a YouTube site that I call that it's called Biz Books. And every other week I interview an author of a business book. And it's a lot of fun. It's like a 45-minute conversation, sort of a deep dive into the book. So for those of you guys, we've got, it's fairly popular. And so anyway, I interviewed a guy named Mark Ackler. Mark is a former venture capitalist. He wrote a book called Exit Right. And it was all, you know, we just talked before about, about selling your business and succession planning.
Right.
He focuses on companies that are at the startup stage and thinking about their exits. Even when when you're starting up a company as an entrepreneur, the last thing you're thinking about is exiting your company. It's a startup. His, you know, thing is, listen, that's the first thing that you should be thinking about. You need to be thinking about, you know, buy sell agreements and valuing your company at the beginning and, you know, what your infrastructure is going to be and your legal costs and, you know, all the different considerations to really position your company for a future sale, because it's all about the final exit. So, you know, I learned from him that his smartest investments, because when you're a venture capitalist, John, you're investing for the exit, right? You know, you're giving money to these startup firms because at some point you're going to want an exit plan. This is what venture capitalists require of their investor, of their entrepreneurs they put money behind. And if they're doing it, we should all be thinking the same way. You know, even when we start up a business, what are we doing right now so that we can maximize its valuation when we exit that business? Even if we don't exit the business, it'll still grow in value if we have that mindset. It's a great book. Again, it's called Exit Right, and the author is Mark Ackler.
Work from home, a very controversial topic these days, because companies are willy-nilly putting in mandates that some employees object to. Work from home is no longer the dominant story in America as we thought a year ago. It's transforming a number of businesses into either empty floors some days of the week or you must be there Monday. Now, you point us to a MarketWatch story about Snap and other tech companies, but I think this is all companies, Gene. Everybody's now struggling with what is to be done.
Yeah, you missed my, it is on my Medium account, but I wrote in Washington Times this week about work from home workers. And I tongue in cheek was accusing them of stealing time from their employers. And here's the reason why I make that assumption. The Bureau of Labor Statistics, John, just recently released data about work from home workers. They surveyed thousands of them. They did time study surveys. And they found that the average worker working from home spent 5.5 hours a day on their job. And the average worker working in the office spent 7.5 hours a day working on their job. Now, obviously, there's a lot of assumptions and there could be some subjectivity there. But the takeaway is that there is a real cost to employers when your employees are working from home. There are some employees that are really working hard. There are some employees that apparently are not. And the averages show that people that are working from home are still just not focusing on their jobs as much as when they're in the office. Don't yell at me, yell at the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So that's for an employers like Snap, like Elon Musk at Twitter. Some people like they look at that really seriously, and they're like, you know, we need to have our employees come into the office because that's where the work is getting done. Otherwise, it's like we're paying them for work they're not doing. So it is a real, it's going to continue to be an issue over the next few years as we sort out this workplace issue. But just bear in mind, if you're an employer, guys, just it is a real benefit. It is a cost to your company to have employees work from home. And you have to figure in that cost in some way when you compensate your employees. That's what the numbers are showing.
Gene Marks, the small business columnist for The Guardian newspaper, UK and US edition. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.